I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. So happy Pride Month, everyone. Today, I am joined by Kelly Miller and Kendra Eich, and they are partners in life and business at Brooklyn-based creative studio And Or. Hello, ladies. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I'm going to start with Kelly. So why did you decide to start And Or? And just give me a little background on what And Or is. What is its specific focus in the creative space?
Sure. And Or started in 2014. This idea sort of came on the coattails of a few kind of big moments for both of us professionally and personally. So, you know, And Or, just to kind of give you an overview of what the studio is, we're kind of like a small design and production studio. And my background is in graphic design, animation, directing. So I was working at a lot of motion design studios, doing network rebrands and so on and so forth. And then Kendra comes from the agency side of things. So she was working at Edelman, which is a big PR agency, in their digital department, doing copywriting and creative directing there. So, you know, we both kind of like were at like kind of, you know, good levels in our career, putzing along. And then when I was working at Trollback before I came to And Or or started And Or, and I worked on the show open and show packaging for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, designed and directed that. And it was just like such a great project and really like exactly hit my personal goals and tone of voice in the work. So I just was like super excited about it and was like, this is like exactly the type of work I want to be doing. You know, Trollback is amazing and works on so many great things, but you know, that was sort of like a little bit of a outlier of a project for them just tonally. So I was just sort of starting to think about ways that I could start to kind of incorporate humor and kind of my design sensibility a little bit more into my commercial work. At the same time, Kendra had written a piece for McSweeney's called...
Oh, wow.
Generic. it was published on the McSweeney's Internet Tendencies, and it's titled, "This is a Generic Brand Video." Kind of got a little bit of notice there, and then the stock footage company Dissolve picked it up and asked if they could kind of create a video around it because they loved it so much using their stock footage. So she was like, yeah, sure, that's awesome. And then they did this video version using her script and credited her and everything, and it went like viral. Everybody was sharing it. It has like, you know, millions of views, like truly viral. It was like pretty funny to watch. And then because of that, we both were like, hey, I think there's something to this sort of like humor tone of voice thing that we have going on. And because we have like complementary skill sets, like this could become something that's like a larger studio or agency. We got married that year as well. So we were actually driving up to the Catskills where we're located right now. And we kind of were like, how can we like have the freedom to just come up to upstate whenever we want? And I was like, oh, we could like start a studio. So that was sort of like where it was born out of. Cut to 5.5 years later, and we have a studio in South Williamsburg in Brooklyn, and you know, a handful of employees, and have been at it for a while now.
And then where did the name come from? And it's And/Or.
Yes, that's also kind of a weird story. We were brainstorming names, and you know, like we're both sort of like in branding and stuff, so we know how important it is to have a catchy name. So just brainstorming names that felt right for us, we had like a giant list of them, and we were instant messaging because Slack wasn't around yet. So we're just like chatting, and I was like, it could be this name. And then I wrote in the next line, And Or, and the intention was to write another name. And Kendra was like, ooh, I love that. And I was like, what? And she was like, And Or, that's great. That's exactly what we are. And I was like, oh yeah, that is really good. Because And initially it was like, we didn't really know how the studio was going to go, if it was going to be a little bit more like freelance and like you could kind of work with me or Kendra or both of us, or maybe you want motion, maybe you just want design, maybe you want copywriting. So we were kind of like, you know, just sort of letting it take shape. And I think it still applies because we do a lot of different types of things. So yeah, so that's sort of where it came from.
Kendra, why did you love it?
I think just what Kelly was saying, it was short and punchy and a little bit, I think we're also very into like self-referential humor, and it felt like it could be sort of meta too when we're talking about the studio. Like, you can get this, you can get that, you can get all of these things. It starts with an A, so we'll be at the top of lists. Yeah.
I'm going to go back and watch it, but I'm pretty sure I saw that McSweeney's video myself. And so back in the day. And also, I also loved the Last Week Tonight open. And that's won, I feel like that's won some awards, yes?
We won a silver at ProMax. So yeah, okay. It did win. It won an award, a major award.
Yes, it won a major award. Let us stand on that. Yeah. And then, so did you guys always know how you were going to divide the duties, or did you feel like what your skill sets were sort of discrete, or how have you sort of managed that, what each of you do?
I mean, it's pretty interesting. Our skill sets are definitely discrete and complementary. Like, Kendra really came into this, and sorry, I'm speaking for you, but what, having no idea about like the production pipeline or like how animation or motion design is created, which is, you know, that's totally fine. It's not hard to learn, but you know, so she didn't know about that stuff at all. So obviously I was managing a lot of the motion design production, and I still do that, like kind of leading the design team and leading anything that sort of has like a visual heavy lift. And then Kendra is what I call the idea machine. So she is really great at coming up with amazing ideas and writing and coming up with strategy and doing scripts and just sort of like helping pull all of the stuff together so that it makes sense and is well thought through. And then she also brings sort of like that advertising sensibility where it's, you know, looking at how a campaign might work versus, you know, sort of like a one-off piece. So that has been super helpful and really like led to a lot of cool opportunities for us. And I still think we kind of like operate in those two divisions, but you know, when we start working on things on the concept level, it really is like super collaborative, and like she'll come up with a million ideas, I'll come up with some ideas, and then we'll kind of like just go back and forth and trade things, and then kind of figure out what, you know, with our clients, what do we want to produce out of this pile of idea, and then kind of go from there. Kendra's also picked up the reins on directing edit more, a little bit more than I do, and also like directing voiceover, directing, you know, helping out with music searches and audio and stuff like that. So it's been really fun for me to kind of see her grow. My proudest moment was when she knew what an alpha was and actually said it without being prompted. She's like, so now is that, the logo's on alpha, right? And I was like, this is amazing.
I knew I was dropping knowledge at that moment. Yeah.
Did you, when you guys decided to start the studio, so you'd gotten married, you had the place or you wanted to come up to the Catskills, but you're already spending a lot of time together. And then you're like, okay, we're going to start a studio together. This is really a pandemic driven question where all of us are working from home with our significant others. So did you ever have any panic about we're going to start this business together, so it's really like all in all the time? Or did you just not think about the implications of what you were committing to at that point?
I mean, I think a lot of people ask us that question in COVID times and non-COVID times because they're slightly horrified at the idea of being together all the time.
But I mean, I'm feeling you right now.
So there's a couple of answers. Like, one is just the general answer of like, what's it like to, you know, live and work with this person and and be around them all the time. And I think for us, it just, I kind of knew, like, we kind of knew, we already spent like a good deal of time together outside of work, obviously. And I think we just kind of knew it would be okay. Like, we knew each other really well. We had been together for 7 years before we got married, 6 years before we got married. So it's not like we had just started dating or something. So we knew each other pretty well. And I at least had a feeling it would be fine and we can navigate it. We're very complimentary as people too, I think. Like, Kelly's takes the lead more and I sort of am more supportive, and you know, so there's like natural roles we fall into. Mm-hmm. And then for the, you know, COVID question, I think that's been interesting because I, for a lot of reasons, the uncertainty, the being in the same place with your partner all the time, all of those things are things that I felt already just from owning a studio and working with my partner at the studio. So for me, I'm like, those things haven't been that much of a shock because they don't feel that different. It's like, we already worked together all the time and we already knew each other really well in that way. And then there was already a lot of uncertainty, anxiety, and panic in owning a studio. It hasn't felt that different along those lines so far.
You'd like pre-conditioned yourself for pandemic. So that worked out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you guys got married in 2014, started a studio. So now you're presenting yourself in the marketing world and you're presenting yourself as this couple. Has that been, I mean, I don't know. In the creative space, I feel like people are pretty welcoming to all that. But what have you encountered navigating in that world?
Yeah, I think people normally don't know that we're married, which is always interesting to me. Like,
you don't like walk in and be like, hello, we're married.
No.
We have a coordinated dance studio.
Yeah. I think in the beginning, like, just out of nerves, sometimes one of us would just blurt it out, but like, someone gave us the wise advice, you don't need to tell people that, they don't care. And we were like, oh, okay. But you know, as you like work with clients longer on multiple projects, like eventually, of course, like it comes up and sometimes they're like, we had no idea. So I think that's funny. I think it just sort of shows that, you know, we're very respectful of each other in the workplace and like try not to let our coupleness show through, although our employees might beg to differ sometimes. But yeah, so I don't think it's people care that much. I think they find it more like novel or something.
Mm-hmm. In terms of people being welcoming, absolutely. I think we've never, you know, thank God, experienced discrimination because of that in any way in the creative film industry or creative, you know, networking and all that. So that's never, thankfully, we've come far enough where like that we don't really worry about that in like the New York and LA circles. Obviously, we just sort of, I mean, I personally have like always operated that since I came out that way, since I came out, where I'm just like, you know what, I'm just going to pretend everybody's cool with this and just live my life that way. And then if something comes up, I'll deal with it. But yeah, I think we just kind of, you know, navigate it through, and everybody's been, yeah, people have always been very cool with it. I think there's more subtle ways, more around being women that are probably bigger factors than ever, like the announcing we're gay or queer or whatever it is. That probably are bigger
makes
factors.
Makes me laugh because, like, who's going to announce? I mean, when I come to a meeting, I'm not going to be like, hello, I am straight and married. Like, no one cares. But let's talk a, I mean, I have this conversation about being a woman in the industry or whatever in professional life occasionally, and I have definite blinders about it. For example, pay discrepancy, things like that. I mean, I haven't seen what, I don't really know what people are being paid next to what I'm being paid. I just feel like I do my work and hope the work speaks for itself. But what, mm-hmm. I mean, what's been your experience as far as being women in this industry?
Yeah, I mean, I also have no idea what people are getting paid. I mean, I think, you know, I've had really good male mentors who have been like, your day rate is too low, which was like, oh, really? Okay. So, you know, it's sort of like, that's awesome that they would tell anybody that. But so I think that was great. But yeah, I mean, I think as far as being women, it's really hard to know where the line is. I would say that nobody has ever been like blatantly discriminatory, or I've never really experienced that in working at studios or as a studio owner. I think it's all just like so much more buried that it's hard to point at it and be like,
yeah,
that is why.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this industry is very male dominated. I think it's becoming more balanced. And, you know, when I was at Trollback, one thing that I loved about working there is that Jacob is very supportive of women. And like, there were always women there. And in fact, it's the first place I ever worked with a female creative director. So, you know, that was an amazing experience. But yeah, you know, just kind of noticing as you grow in your career, like, oh, wait, why aren't there any women who own studios? Or just like really searching for those pillars and leaders that you can kind of use as role models or look to for guidance, even if it's not like a one-on-one mentorship type of thing, just being like, oh my God, that person is so awesome. I totally want to do that. And I can see my career path through the way that they got there. It's just, it's slim pickings. So that is sort of difficult, but it's also, you know, a fun challenge, or just like an exciting challenge, because you're, you know, we're kind of defining that for other people, which I think is really powerful. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I do sometimes in moments of distress, ask myself and Kendra if like, we're not getting more work because we're women, we're being sort of looked over because the studio is run by women. I don't know. I'm sure it's definitely not like, out of these two studios, man studio and woman studio, which one will you choose to work with? But I think it's more just like who people know, who they feel comfortable with. This is a familiar style, yeah, or working process to what I came up with. And like, because a lot of the people who are making those decisions are men, they kind of just tend to gravitate towards, mm-hmm, people that they feel comfortable with, which, mm-hmm, is like, you know, that's the problem of all of what is happening right now,
yeah,
is,
yeah,
that we just sort of like ignore our implicit biases and like these sort of like deep rooted systematic prejudices that we don't necessarily have or hold as values, but like, we're just kind of going along with it because no one's told us not to yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the flip side, we've also had, you know, really positive experiences where we've done capabilities or with potential clients, and they've like actually said like it's really refreshing to see someone different coming in here and presenting work. And like, of course, we always, the work is the work, and the work should be the quality, the work, we should hold the work to the highest quality, as it shouldn't matter whoever's making it. Like, we want to be considered for the quality of our work versus whether we're women or queer or whatever it is. But I do think there is sort of something interesting to like bringing in a fresh perspective or fresh voices, or even if it's just presenting different energy. And we've heard that from, you know, freelancers who've worked for us and our employees too, that it does feel a little bit different, even if it's just the fact of knowing, of working for a woman-owned studio. We may not behave any differently, but like, it's just nice to see that in practice, I think, because it is kind of rare. So that's always like a great thing to hear, I think, and makes us feel like all of the toil and stress is worth it for that reason.
I mean, that point that you touched on about the implicit bias or the, you know, people wanting to hire in their own image. I mean, do you think that's where these conversations and the education comes in, which is, yeah, you're comfortable hiring what you know, but try to get a different perspective and bring, because you'll get different creativity, you'll get different ideas, which, you know, in the end should be valuable to everyone.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that 100%. I think that's what makes life interesting, and what makes media interesting is hearing other people's stories. I think there's something comforting to hearing something that feels like your own story, for sure. And like that's always nice. But the real power of media and design and animation and all of the stuff that we work on is being able to see a different perspective, being able to see someone else's story, and like really gaining an understanding about the world through that. So I think when you're not allowing those people to be heard or seen, it's just, you're doing everyone a disservice. Like, it's cool to see other things and like,
yeah,
awesome and fun to see new creative stuff being made. So I just think let's do it.
Well, especially in this industry where I feel like it should be on the edge of that anyway, and we should all always be wanting to try to do things a little differently or see things a little differently. It makes sense that this conversation would happen here, but also be, you know, kind of on the edge of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so Kendra mentioned this. This is my stupid heteronormative question, which I had prepped you guys for, which is, Kendra said queer. Why do you use queer versus lesbian? I just don't know the answer.
Why don't you answer, Kendra?
Oh, great. Well, I think you're like the word person.
So.
Right. I mean, technically, both of us identify as lesbian, but I think that term feels a little old school these days, mm-hmm. and maybe a little restrictive. I think the, you know, LGBTQ community has sort of like moved beyond some of those older terms, and like queer just feels a little bit more inclusive. It's a way to like welcome a lot of different people to our studio as well. And I think both of us we kind of prefer that broader terminology. There's a little bit of playfulness to it. It kind of leaves the question like, you know, I'm a little different, but I'm still a complex, multifaceted human. So yeah, I think it's just a more modern way of talking about, you know, your identity. So that's why we've been using that more. I think lesbian is it's kind of a weird word anyway.
I agree. It is a weird word. it's definitely loaded. It conjures like a sort of a specific image that,
yeah.
I mean, through no fault of its own. But I think, yeah, I think though also for me, it's showing my age, because you're like, wait, I thought it was this word. And now a new word evolves because new generations of people show up with new thinking. And you're like, wait, what happened to that other word? So
So
older people have to be reminded, like, words change, language changes, keep up with the times.
That's why we keep the youth around in our studio, so they can constantly update us and school us on the newest terms, and we can stay relevant.
Have you found that there are different leadership challenges around being women? I mean, you're running a studio where it's the two of you, and I don't know how many employees you have, but do you feel like women need to lead differently or approach things differently than men when it comes to leading? And I'll start with Kelly.
What I was talking about earlier is just that it's hard to have role models in that position because there have not been a lot of women in those leadership roles. So, you know, you're sort of defining it for yourself. You know, like I just, in my career, very rarely had the opportunity to see like, okay, this is how a woman approaches a meeting with a room full of executives. This is how a woman leads a team and gets her team motivated and kind of brings together the work. And this is how a woman might talk about creative to their client and sell it through. So, and you know, it's a little bit like nitpicky or nuanced, I guess, like perhaps it would be exactly the same, but I do think there's a different approach that is inherent, especially for us. I think the way that we work is super collaborative. It's very inclusive. We don't pit art directors against each other. Like, okay, you do this direction and you do that direction. Whoever wins gets to do the final work. You know, it's just, I really didn't like it when that would become like kind of the spirit of a project. When I was working on things like that, I was like, why am I competing with this person when we're working on the same project? Like, we're competing against other studios. Like, it just seems silly to like have that happen. Anyway, and then, you know, we also just really try to keep in mind the idea of like diminishing this idea of power and hierarchy in the studio. It's, you know, which again just speaks to collaboration. Like, I'm not like the creative director, like shouting out orders or ripping apart like somebody's boards or something. The idea is to like see what people are doing and grow that and like make it better. And just because you've only been in the industry for 3 years and I've been in it for 20 doesn't mean that your ideas are invalid or something. And, you know, it's more about me like sharing my experience with you. So anyway, I think these are just like things that feel very feminine to me. It's like listening, supporting, growing. And not to say that the men that I've worked with in my life haven't done that, but, you know, I do think it's a little bit of a different approach. And yeah, I mean, I think sometimes that's something that our clients maybe pick up on, and maybe sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not good. I don't know. But yeah, that's sort of my
one thing. I mean, when tasked with having these kinds of conversations or, you know, talking about, I don't know, gender issues, et cetera, or race too, which can be challenging. But I do think like these questions about, you know, you're women, your business is female owned. What is that like for you? And I always kind of struggle with the conversation because I feel like just because you're a woman, like one woman isn't going to do the same thing that another woman is going to do. And she's not going to do that because a man does it or doesn't do it. And a man isn't going to necessarily act like this. Do you know what I mean? So it's like you're putting people in those broad categories is also kind of dumb. Like everybody is an individual who does things on their own. Sure. So I struggle with the conversation as a whole because I feel like it's getting so categorical as to lose value.
For sure. Yeah. Totally. And I think we struggle with the same thing, and, you know, it's often like a conversation we're constantly having, like, how much does this matter? Is it this? Is it that? Are we all just individuals in this big, beautiful world of creativity? Yeah. But I think there are some like concrete ways, men, women, whoever, that we've tried to think about and enact. And like that comes through just mainly like just putting the effort into trying to seek out diverse voices. And that can be women, freelancers, people of color, just making the effort. Like one of the last live action shoots we did, you know, we've directed like a fair share of jobs in the last couple of years, and every list of DPs we were getting from like our line producer were like the same list of like five white guys, who knows if they are gay or straight, probably straight, doesn't really matter. And like I think this is like the fifth project we had done, and we're still getting this list of like suggested DPs that are all these like white guys who are all very nice, and like we had worked with some of them and they were great and of course super awesome. But we were like, you know what, like it was just bothering me, and I was like, you know what, why don't we just, can we make an effort to like go find a woman for this list so at least there's some diversity to this list? Or, and I think we're trying to do the same things with like people of color and reaching out and like just trying to make our list of options as diverse as possible and meeting a lot of diverse voices and people to be able to work with. And I think that sort of effort, just like being aware of it and noticing it and going, oh, is this entire crew, like, is this a 30 dude crew of white guys? Like, why is that? Like, can't we try and make an effort to like make this a little bit more diverse? I think through stuff like that, that's sort of the concrete ways that make sense for anybody to try and change the balance, and like just entering more voices, more perspectives, going out and seeking more of those types of people. And to me, those things make a concrete difference, like, because you can actually bring more people to the table, more voices to the table, And there's nothing, I think there's like no downside to that. It's not giving someone a job because of tokenism, but it's saying, hey, I want to consider a diverse range of people for this job. So I'm not just hiring the same, you know, three guys named Ryan or whatever it is.
Did you have a, when you started to try to, you know, throw that net wider, do you find that there's a pipeline for diverse people to get it, you know, to become a DP, to become a creative director? Is there opportunities? Are there ways for those people to get into the industry and to develop?
I'm maybe. I think
that's an area where we all need to do better, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there definitely are. I think it's similar to what Kendra's saying, though, where, you know, just being aware when you're looking for an intern, like trying to encourage people of color, women, queer people, whatever, to apply, you know, and just like that's something that we put in our job description when we're posting for new hires or interns, is like this, prefer that it's a person of color, a woman or queer, but like not necessarily, like white dudes can apply also, of course, but you know, we're just, we make it very clear upfront, like we're looking for this type of person, but obviously it's open to everybody. And at the end of the day, whoever is the best fit for the studio is who we would hire or take on as an intern. And that's like a personality thing. That's a work thing, making sure people have like experience with motion design or understand it in some manner. So, you know, it's just kind of, you know, like Kendra was saying, it's about casting a wide net and then just finding the right fit out of that large selection of people. That I think is the most important thing. And then as far as like a pipeline, I mean, I know there's a lot of different organizations that are trying really hard to get people moving through the system. But ultimately, I think it's the job of people like us and like other leaders and creative directors and owners of studios and marketing executives to create those opportunities. I mean, the opportunities are already there and you just have to open it, open the door and be like, come on in to opportunity land.
I think it requires also that people, A, be more aware and B, be willing to just take the extra step. You know, sometimes I think it's mm-hmm. you're busy and it's just easiest to hire the first person through the door.
Of course, yeah, totally. And that's something I think we're trying to hold ourselves accountable to, especially with everything that's been happening in the last couple of weeks. Like, obviously, yeah. We've had a lot of self-examination, as I think a lot of people have, and we've had a lot of discussions, very open discussions with everyone at our studio, and trying to figure out things we can do and actions we can take. And I think takeaway from that stuff is like, just action is better than lip service, right? Like, how can you make these things concrete? And that, I think, can be applied to like everyone in this industry, where it's not just posting a rainbow colored logo or something for Pride, for example, or posting like a Black Lives Matter hashtag, but like, what things can you actually do, whether it's donating to different causes or sharing resources, actually putting into practice these efforts that we're talking about and like just realizing them, versus just being like, yeah, that's terrible, you know, totally with you, and then like not doing anything. Because doing stuff is the hard part, right? Like, we all know that.
Yes to all of that. Just wanted to go back to one thing that one of you said, which was about, I did a podcast with Becky Morrison of The Light. I don't know if you know her, but she's in your sphere because she's in Brooklyn too. But she and I were talking about flattening the hierarchy. But it was around that, like not having ideas necessarily come top down, or being like, well, I've been in the industry for 20 years, or I'm the creative director, so what I say goes. But I find that idea very appealing, but I also feel like it challenges people's egos, essentially. Do you find, you know, if you're trying to operate in a system like that where everybody feels comfortable bringing forth ideas. Like, how do you manage yourself while you're trying to lead that kind of a structure? And I'll start with Kelly.
Honestly, it's kind of hard. I do think...
I think it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've tried some various ways of doing this. And I think because we're so small and like we don't have a deep staff of senior people, and our studio is, you know, for better or worse, it is me and Kendra. So we've sort of experimented with a few different things where when we had a few more people on staff, we would have them kind of contribute like larger conceptual ideas. Mm-hmm. And what we found through that is that people obviously who have more experience and are a little bit more mature have better ideas. So, and it also started to become completely unruly where we had like 3 hour long meetings going through everybody's idea vomit, for lack of a better word. And mm-hmm. it wasn't functional. So basically, I think we're both just very aware and attuned to what people's strengths are and figuring out how to develop those and grow those versus like, you know, of course the idea of just having like everyone just throwing an idea is like, it's a great theory and concept, but some people just aren't good at it. First of all, mm-hmm. like it's just not their strong suit. Some people are just like way better at like making formal design look amazing. And like, they need someone to sort of lead them with like a really great concept that they can like visualize. So just kind of being aware of what people's strengths are, I think has helped that, where it's like, okay, this project actually would be great if we got some ideas from X, Y, and Z, or this project, let's just sort of, we'll sit in a corner and hash this out. And then when we're ready to visualize it, we'll bring in these people to help us collaborate doing that. And just kind of making sure we can give everyone the space that they need to grow and do great work. So yeah, I think it's, you know, it gets a little bit messy. And I think whenever I've found that like when you try to like super systematize it, it just like yeah. falls apart anyway. So
yeah.
it's just kind of being, just really being attuned to like what people are good at, where they want to grow. Like if someone really wants to get into like doing concepting and working on that level, like we will absolutely bring them in and like help and encourage them to contribute or just like sit in on like a meeting where Kendra and I are like going through stuff or whatever. Like we're, yeah, that's basically, I think, how
we deal with it. I think there's also a value in leadership and decision making. You know, like at a point an organization just needs someone to be like, okay, this is the path we're taking. Otherwise, yeah, you'll be wandering in the desert forever.
Yeah. Yeah, for totally. Sure.
And
yeah.
I think you can be a strong leader without being an asshole, right? And like that's the thing. I mean, we have a thing on our website that we have like, you know, house rules, and one of them is we don't work with jerks. And I think that rings true throughout all of our process. Like
I saw your house rules. They were not super yeah. complicated.
No, they were not.
So sort of flipping this around, do you guys have any ideas or thoughts on how brands, I would say brands specifically, but maybe also networks or services, but how during Pride Month, thinking about how they can be more inclusive and respectful toward their clients, their audiences, et cetera, who are non-binary? I'll start with Kendra just to mix it up.
I think there's little ways that do make a difference. So like one thing that we started doing is when we send like a welcome email to a new freelancer or something to get their information, we also ask for their pronouns. So mm-hmm. we've worked with trans and non-binary people, freelancers in the past, and we've learned a lot through that process. And I think everyone, you know, in changing your language or the way that you're talking or what pronouns you're using, it's a struggle at first. And we kept like kind of kicking ourselves because we kept like messing up. And I think for us as a studio, we were like, the way that we could be leaders in that was making sure everybody knew that this was an important thing to get right and to keep working at, and not just blowing it off like, oh, this is hard, like, haha. We were kind of like, no, this is important. Like, we need to make sure we're using the correct pronouns. And then how can we take that even further and like normalize it a little bit more, so it's not just like a weird thing that happens when we have trans or non-binary person working with us. Let's make this like part of our normal studio systematic process, where it's a thing that is always a possibility, right? Versus like a rare thing that happens sometimes. So that's just like one sort of little example I think anybody can do. Like, I've noticed people are doing that on Twitter now too, where you're just putting your pronouns, your preferred pronouns, in like your Twitter bio or your email signature. And I think that's like something that can just, you know, signify that this is a thing now, guys. And mm-hmm. like, it's important that we start to recognize that and like I said, sort of normalize it in our systems. And then, I think other than that, it's like just supporting dialogue, questioning things, questioning yourself, challenging yourself, kind of some of the stuff we were talking about earlier, like not just being complacent and being like, oh yeah, I totally support that, and then like not doing anything about it. Challenging yourself to go to the talk that has an organization that's helping support diverse voices in the industry, meeting people, trying to get that pipeline going. Like, you know, we were talking about this earlier where we were all like, I don't know if there is like a very go-to place or pipeline for finding new and diverse talent. So like, well, maybe we can help start that or work with our other studios that we're friends with and start to get that going. So just things like that, where I think just making the effort and thinking about it and not just kind of shoving it to the back of your mind is like something you should do one day.
I feel like having the pronoun conversation is actually a big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems small, but I feel like it opens the door for other conversations, and it opens the door for people to realize they're in a place, ideally that they're in a place where it should be accepting, and that they're not going to have to sort of struggle to, do you know what I mean? They're not going to have to struggle totally to assert their identity. They're going to be able to relax and do what they do, their work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we want to be, I think that's a great example of like something like, we may not have, you know, 4 years ago or 5 years ago when we started the studio, that was not a thing that we were even thinking of. And I think as the culture has evolved, as the conversation has evolved around it, and also working with people who were kind of like, thankfully, were like, no, this is what I need, and I need you guys to do this. And we're like, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That sort of sparked us to be like, oh, we should really be doing this all the time. And like, this affects people, and this isn't just something we can sort of be silent on or sit on. It's been a interesting change for us to try and, you know, push along and make as leaders of our studio. And
all right, so we're coming toward the end of time, so I'm going to switch gears completely and talk. I just want to talk a little bit about, at the end of this conversation, about where you guys think that, where do you think live action production is in your area? Is it something that you think is going to come back sometime soon? And, or, to use your name, anyway, do you have...
You get a dollar every time.
Oh, thanks. are there things that you guys are doing that are allowing you to produce differently, like remote production or different things that are sort of allowing you to go ahead and move forward on this, but not going back to the way it's always been done?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, New York is still in phase one of reopening, which is very limited. So I don't think New York City is close to doing live action production, to be totally honest. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, what I think people that we're talking to and, you know, conferring with other studio owners and such, producers, they've all been sort of talking about looking a lot at what LA is doing. LA has it like on point, like they've got documents, they've got rules, they are figuring it out. So I think whatever sort of comes out of that, like I'm I'm sure New York will just sort of like adapt and follow. So that's one thing. I think other areas that we've definitely seen is people who do more live action production than we do are tapping into their directors to sort of shoot from home or wherever they're sort mm-hmm. of sheltering at, and using their families or pets to kind of create content. And then, you know, I think we worked on a project. It was sort of like Kickstarter fundraising video for a new product launch. And initially that was going to be like a kind of like a tabletop shoot that we were going to do at our studio. And then COVID happened, so we couldn't shoot anything. So we were just sort of like trying to figure out other ways to work with like existing photography or use stock or animation. And luckily the photographer who had taken the original product shots said that she could just kind of do some still photography. And we were like, oh, cool. Can you just shoot this on a speed burst so it looks like an animated GIF? And then you get like a little bit of animated movement to the photography. You know, she wasn't like a video, like a DP shooting film. So yeah, I mean, you know, just kind of being like a little bit more flexible than you mm-hmm. normally would, I think is the best way to kind of deal with that. I think one of the questions that you had asked was, do you think more people will be coming for motion design and live action or animation? Mm-hmm. And that was sort of like the promise when COVID started. It was like, ooh, like all the work will be flooding in because nobody can shoot. So watch out, animation and motion design studios, you're going to get real busy. And we were like, okay, we're waiting. But that didn't really happen for us. I mean, it may have happened for other studios, but we did not experience that at all. And we asked an agency EP about that. We were like, oh, are you guys like considering animation solutions more because of, you know, the shooting situation? And he was like, no, like just blatant no. Like,
And why?
I mean, he basically said like exactly what I said, like that they were just finding different solutions, like having directors shoot at their homes or using user generated content just as sort of like a stopgap until LA opens. So yeah, I think people are just sort of like doing little stopgap measures until the real production can start again.
Well, yeah, I think there's insecurity around budgets too. So, you know, if they're having a hard time saying, let's switch production over to animation or motion graphics, when it's like, how do we even know what we want to be spending on at this point? And, you know, you do sort of see like the content, not like there's not enough content, there's more content than we can all ever consume. But in terms of new content, you're definitely seeing that pipeline get thin.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think I kind of feel like that's where things might change a little bit more, is like in narrative, where maybe animated shows kind of have a little more presence. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I think it will be very different, which I am both looking forward to and a little bit like saddened by, because there's something so fun to this sort of energy of like the shoot and like all these people and everyone's doing their part and like,
yeah,
just like the 2-day, like we're in this together team aspect. I love that. But I also do think those shoots can become like super crowded and bloated and like, who is that guy? You know, like, why are there 25 clients here? So I think some paring down of it is not a bad move.
I have a joke sort of about how, you know, like everyone's talking about the Video Village is going to go remote. And I have sort of a joke about how like, and then never return. So yeah. It'll always be like, well, clients, you cannot come on set. Sorry.
Yeah. It's like remote and then someone just turns off the TV. Like
technical difficulties.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. You didn't see any of that? Oh.
All right. So last question, which is sort of one I've been asking a lot of people, but well, now I feel like we have multiple things going on, but are there any silver linings that you guys are seeing out of this time of shutdown, of pandemic, of protests? What is there anything that you're seeing that you're like, well, actually, this could lead to something better? And again, I'll spring this on Kendra.
Oh, well,
I feel like Kelly has so much to say about to say to me a lot all the time. No, I'm just kidding.
It's a little window into the relationship. No.
Yeah. She expresses and I agree with it. Sorry, that was our weird refrigerator. And also our cat is wailing in the background. So
I can't hear the cat. Maybe okay, the cat great. Would like to share her silver lining. Anyway.
He has a lot of thoughts. But yeah, I mean, I think the things that we've been talking about are just the silver linings is obviously, you know, reexamining like what's necessary. And, you know, in particular, like, you know, one thing that we would always run into is just like working late hours or working so late that like you come home and you don't feel like making dinner or you're constantly stressed or you're constantly sort of like on the move and going from meeting to meeting or whatever it is. And I think during this time, it's really kind of pulled back the curtain and exposed like, wait, a lot of that stuff maybe wasn't necessary. Like you mm-hmm. can maybe get more work done if you're not going to 5 million meetings in a conference room every day. Maybe you can actually make dinner at a reasonable hour if you don't have to like get on the subway and go home and do your whole commute. So I think there's a lot of things that have come out of it where it's like, oh, this is possible. And I think, you know, another just concrete example is like, I think sometimes before there is a little bit of hesitancy about like people working from home, like multiple days a week, or like that somehow it was like slacking off or not fully committed or whatever it was. And I think what this time has probably made a lot of people realize is like, no, actually, like that's not only possible, and you can still get your work done. You can still be just as productive and also like add to your quality of life. So especially for like people, I mean, we don't have kids, but like parents who are at home handling their kids and like dealing with all of that and work, like I can just imagine that like just being more flexible with work hours, with when you have to be on site and when you can work from home, I think will just be, I think the silver lining out of this for a lot of people and sort of opening that up to not feeling guilty that you're not like showing up for work every single day and like being there for 9 hours or however long it is and still being valued and knowing you're doing a good job.
I mean, I feel like I've worked from home for a long time as the four longtime listeners of this podcast know, but I feel like actually if you work from home, you probably work much more because you just, I mean, you fill the time you have, right? So if you're not commuting and you're grabbing your lunch from leftover chili from last night and eating that at your desk, like you just, I mean, and a lot of people I know during this have worked a lot. So, All right, Kelly, since you're like silver lining lady, apparently, what are your silver linings?
Well, I do think Kendra ticked off many of them. I think just finding better work-life balance in general is a great move for everybody. I feel like this whole quarantine sheltering in place has really like forced people to like slow down, figure out how to do things remotely, just kind of like take a minute to reflect on how overstimulated our lives have been for the past many years, which, you know, I don't think anybody realized until we had to kind of like stop for a minute. I also think, you know, just kind of talking about the protests and like the amount of civil action that's happening right now, I'm not sure, but like I predict that wouldn't have been quite as powerful if we were all still kind of, you know, going about our everyday life where, you know, you had to really find time to do those things. And I think that's extremely important and like a huge silver lining. Like I've kind of committed myself like, okay, I have time, a little bit of extra time now, and I can sort of get a little bit more politically involved and active. And like that is something I've been wanting to do for years, for decades, you know, and just kind of never really felt like I could afford to give any time to it. So I think that's sort of an amazing output of this for sure. I think people just being at home and being like pissed off and like ready yeah. to like go fight the good fight and having time to actually do it is like really a great outcome. And it does seem like it will have some lasting change, and I think that's amazing.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll check back in at some point and see if our, if, well, really your silver linings come to that.
Great.
So thanks. Thanks both of you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay. And have a great day. Talk to you again.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
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 That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. If you don't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have comments, questions, or ideas for conversations, please feel free to reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org. And as always, thanks for listening.